I think that the first sound I ever heard as a baby, I would imagine, is jazz. And so I always wanted to play jazz music, but I studied classical music because I was in France and my parents wanted me to have some kind of formal education. So I studied classical music for about, I would say, 8 to 10 years. On, you know, 8 years solid. And then the last couple of years were a little shaky because I didn't want to play classical music anymore. And after that, I played jazz with my father. We had a little band, you know, we call it the Petrucciani Trio. And it was my father on guitar and my brother Louis on bass and myself. We didn't have any drummer. And we play all the old Tarfalo, you know, Red Novo kind of style, kind of thing like that, Wes Montgomery's tunes, arrangement. I would pick it up from albums, you know, and just copy the arrangement, write the chords down, like that. A lot. Like, in fact, I think I know more Wes Montgomery solos by heart than any other musicians that you could mention. You know, I know, like, I don't know, maybe 10, 15, 20 solos of Wes Montgomery that he has recorded on albums. I can tell you the cover of the album, looks like the arrangement, everything. So he's been like really one of more influential for me than other musicians. Right. Bill Evans was a different thing. Bill Evans was, I discovered Bill Evans in 1970, and
you were 8 years old.
No, 70, yeah.
You're born in 62, yeah. Huh?
Yeah, and I didn't like it. My brother came up. We used to have a music store, and, you know, my brother would pick up the jazz record and bring it upstairs, you know, to the house. And he said, check this out. He said, this is great. My brother Louis was already much more advanced than I was as far as years. I was more middle jazz, you know, more like into Errol Garner. You know, like Bill Evans was too progressive for me. I didn't understand it. And he played me the album, you know, on the little tepas, you know, really funky thing. And I said, no, I don't like that. This guy doesn't know how to play. I said, this guy can't play. That was my first reaction on Bill Evans. And he said, no. He said, you're wrong. You don't know what you're talking about. He was right.
Of course.
And I listened because I was open. You know, I was open-minded. So I said, okay, well, if you say I'm wrong, I'm going to really check it out. And I listened and listened and listened. The more I listened, I said, he's right. And I came and I apologized to him, you know. But way later, I mean, it was like, I listened to Bill for months before I could even understand what he was doing. It was like so foreign to me. So I couldn't understand anything. I thought he was just playing, I don't know what, but it didn't sound right. It didn't touch my ears. You know, I couldn't understand the chord, the progressions, the tempos. It was the first time I ever heard a waltz. For instance, when he played very early on that album, it was Montreux 1970. Mm. And he played very early with Eddie Gomez and Marty Morrell on drums. And little by little, then after that, he became like a major influence on me because I realized what he was doing. But ironically, I didn't like Bill at first.
It's astounding to me that an 8-year-old child would be presumptuous enough to say he's not playing. Bill Evans is not playing.
I don't know. I was arrogant. I mean, you know, little guys, you know, little people, short people, they're arrogant little crips, you know. And I admit that I have that kind of energy sometimes. It does, you know, it's not like I say, I don't like that, you know. But then I come back to it and listen, you know, I'm not close-minded. You know, but I come off that way sometimes, but it's not true. It's not really me. I'm not like that. But yes, I was like that, especially my brothers, you know, my older brothers. I like to kick butt a little bit sometimes, the wrong way, but.
You mentioned your size. In fact, you're 3-something feet
right.
tall. You were born with, we call it glass bones, but I don't know what the technical term is.
The technical term is osteogenesis imperfecta.
Yes. Is there a time when growing up you said, this is no more a problem,
It was never a problem.
It was never a problem.
No, because I was born with it.
Yeah.
When you're born with something, you don't know how it feels like to be somebody else, yeah. You know. So it was not a problem, never, in fact. I was really lucky to be raised like a normal kid, like my two other brothers. There was no problem. I was punished when I did things that I wasn't supposed to do, and I was rewarded when I did nice things. Just, you know, the same. Nobody pampered me, mm-hmm. you know, extra. You know, then I'm really grateful for that.
Mm. Your playing also is very emotional playing. You're not just an idea player. You're a heart player.
I think you play like you are. You're a musician, and that's probably, you feel the same way.
People,
you could really define somebody's personality by his music. Sometimes I hear somebody play, and I could almost tell how he's going to be in life.
Your playing, the passion in your playing, no doubt, is what allegedly motivated Charles Lloyd to come out of retirement and go back to active performing.
Right, that's when I came to California. When I met Charles, I didn't know who it was, and I stayed at his house for about a month. There was a piano, like in the studio, there was a piano there, but I have a rule. I never touch other people's instrument unless they ask me to. This is a thing, and I don't like when people do that in my house. If you come to my house and sit on the piano and don't ask me, I'm not going to say anything, but I'm going to say, okay, no class. Mm. Because it's like a thing that I've learned. You know, you say, please, is that okay if I sit down? And I didn't want to say that to him because I didn't want to play, you know. And one day he said, what do you do? I said, well, I play the piano. He said, well, sit down and play. Would you play something for me? And I said, okay. And by that time, it was a month without playing. I was dying to touch the ivories, you know. And so I did, and I was playing. I was so much into what I was doing that I look, and he was gone. And I say, oh, my God, he really didn't like what I did. I chase him away. And I turn around. He was right behind me with a saxophone in my ear. And he was going, whoop, you know, and we start playing. And we play until like 4 or 5 in the morning that day. And then we went to sleep, and I went to sleep in the trailer. I had a little trailer that Charles had provided for me with a little bed in it and a little fridge, you know. And it was like camping. It was fun, you know. I had a great time. And I slept for about 2 hours, and he came with the horn. Obviously, he didn't sleep at all. And he came to the horn, he played, he said, come on, man, get up, let's go. You know, we're doing it again. And we played like that for like 3 days, like nonstop, with like little intermission of 2 or 3 hours of sleep, taking a little nap, you know, getting up, just playing, sleep again, you know, like that. And it was crazy. It was great. And then he said, okay, you want to stay here? And I said, well, I don't know, because it was very, you know, abrupt, you say that? Yeah. And he said, yeah, I want you to stay here. I want to play again. Would you like to be in my band? I said, great. You know, it's an interesting thing to see that I come from like a very little town in the south of France, okay? And sometime I'm like on the stage now with people like Roy Haynes or Freddie Hubbard. And even today I still pinch myself and say, well, I'm really playing with these people. These people used to be my heroes. You know, they're the people I listened to when I was a kid and you know, say, wow. But I never thought I would be who I am now in terms of if somebody when I was in France said, you know, you're going to play with Freddie Hubbard, you're going to record with Roy Haynes, you're going to, you know, play with Lee Konitz and Charles Lloyd. And, you know, if people were to tell me that, I would say, no, you're crazy. You know, no way. It's not going to happen to me. And it did happen. And it's still to this day, I'm still happy about it and shocked. You know, I go, man, I'm just, you know, I'm like, I'm joking around. I'm making fun of Roy Haynes now. You know, I mean, not fun, but, you know, we're making fun on the bus or laughing or telling jokes and stuff like that. And I, you know, for a minute, it goes by flash, and I say, man, I'm doing this with Roy Haynes. This guy's a legend. It was like a great experience and a great honor for me.
Yeah.
And so that's, I think that's, but things go so slow, you know, Ben. You know how it is. It's so slow that you don't see yourself progressing, even in the music. I mean, like, if I hear myself, I mean, I hear the last album I did, and I don't like it. I mean, I like it, but, you know, I say, oh, what did I do that for, you know? And so I hope that the mistake I made on that one, I won't make it the next one. You know what I mean? And because I always try to be better, to do better, because I have a lot to learn. And in fact, I'm very happy about that, because I think if somebody said that's it, I know it all, I think the best would be to quit and change business, do something else, become a painter or something. You know, if you knew you were the greatest of what you do, that there would nobody could be better than you. I think it would be sad in a way. That would be that's it. That would be probably just when death started to come. You know.
they say, if you're not busy being born, you're busy dying. Huh?
Right, exactly. And that's how I feel. I mean, I try to go slow but surely to where I want to be.